My name is Samantha Garner, and I'm from Boston, Massachusetts. I'm a Cheeselandian because I take cheese seriously, just like they do in Wisconsin. Go to Cheeselandia.com to learn more, and if it's for you, sign up.
Greetings, everybody. Capri Cafaro here, the host of Eat Your Heartland Out. I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening to the first season of the show. Really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun. Hope you've enjoyed it as well. And we're going to be back for season two, starting sometime in mid-January. But in the meantime, in between the seasons, we actually have a special treat for you, and it's a sweet one. It is a bonus episode about baking, which is perfect for the holiday season. So pull up a chair and listen to this episode all about baking in the Midwest. We're going to introduce you to Rose McGee, the founder of Sweet Potato Comfort Pie in Minnesota, and then Val Lux, who started the Midwestern Pie Contest. Enjoy and have a wonderful holiday season. And until season two, happy eating. On the show today, we are lucky to have Rose McGee joining us. Rose is the founder of the Sweet Potato Comfort Pie Project. Rose, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
Well, first, I'd like you to maybe tell our listeners just a little bit about you and your background. I know that you have a really interesting day job that I feel actually kind of has a bit of an influence on the Sweet Potato Comfort Pie Project.
My day job with Minnesota Humanities Center?
Yes, that would be the one.
Yeah. Actually, it works out beautifully because that's why I do the work that I do. Because, you know, we're just, our goal at Minnesota Humanities Center is to, you know, have this conscientious society. And we want people to just understand how to communicate with each other effectively and be authentic in the communication. And that's what Sweet Potato Comfort Pie is about as well. It's just that with the Sweet Potato Comfort Pie approach, pie is always involved. So Minnesota Humanities, where I do work, said, we've got to somehow do a partnership with you because you're doing what it is that we are supposed to be doing here as well. So we, since the murder of Mr. George Floyd in May, Minnesota Humanities decided, let's take a look at how we can work with Sweet Potato Comfort Pie and just, you know, get people together in a safe way, have the conversations, and have pie as a part of it. So that's what we've done, established four conversations around the theme, how can we breathe? Because if, as you know, that was, you know, some of the final words of Mr. Floyd, I can't breathe. So how can we breathe? And this is an approach to understanding these aspects of systemic racism. Right. So the first conversation, how can we breathe, the mamas, was focusing on women who had lost their children to, you know, violence, either at the hands of law enforcement or other violence. The second one we did was the elders and the youth.
That's wonderful.
That intergenerational conversation together. And the one we're about to do pretty soon, early November, will be the artists and meaning makers. And then the final one will be in December, and that will be the policy and change makers. And coinciding with each of those, we are working outside of just the Twin Cities. So St. Cloud, Minnesota, Mankato, Minnesota, Duluth, Minnesota, and also, Rochester, Minnesota. So those four cities, we're bringing voices in from there as well. And pies are being made in those respective communities. And then organizations are getting the pies free, and they're able then to gift them into the community according to the theme of that conversation.
That's incredible. I mean, that's profound. And I really love this concept because it shows how food is a tool of not only a conversation starter, but a common denominator. It can serve as a starting point for a dialogue, which is what exactly it sounds like you're doing with the Sweet Potato Pie Comfort Project. Walk us through, you gave us these four themes, particularly, right now with the work post the death of George Floyd, within these communities in Minnesota, but maybe walk us through, what does this look like? So one of the four themes that you did, like the mamas or the intergenerational between the elders and the youth, what exactly happens in these, individual conversations or dialogues?
Well, each one takes on its own energy, obviously, just listening to the title. And certainly the mamas was very emotional, of course.
Sure.
You have women, again, who have been living every day with the loss of their child in such a violent way. One mother who's now very much a community well-known woman now, her son was killed about 20 years ago. But since the murder of George Floyd, this energy that has, come up, people are really rising to get a lot of those cases that were dropped or closed with absolutely no resolve or no investigation, really. Mm-hmm. Many of those mothers are coming forth. And one of our speakers was one of those mothers, and how awful it was when she basically was told just to shut up, just go away.
Wow. Wow.
And then, knowing that her child was innocent of the, the reason that he'd been killed. And even so, there was just no reason for him to have been killed in the manner in which he was.
Obviously, sure, of course.
And then, to hear her talk about how, a couple of days later, they arrested a couple of young men who were the ones that supposedly had committed whatever the crime was. But yet there was never anything back to her of apology or anything for the family in that manner. So these kinds of things, are what we hear every day, and social media has really helped to bring it more to light. And certainly, you listen to stories such as this and you realize Black lives definitely have not mattered to many people. And that's why the movement is so, so intense.
I couldn't say it any more poignantly than you just did. So I'm just trying to picture this. So there's a speaker and that comes in and sort of talks about the theme, of the choice of the theme. And then who does that person speak to? Who else is in the room? And how does pie play a role in that dialogue?
Mm-hmm. Well, the way we've done it, because everything is virtual, we've done everything virtual online. At first, this was the first one we were about to do. And I thought maybe I could bring the mothers together. This was in August. Mm-hmm. And I thought maybe I could bring them together in a social distance space with masks and, everybody would be separated.
Right.
And I could tell that, people weren't really that comfortable with that.
And so I can understand.
Well, yeah. I said, let's just not even focus on that. We'll just do it in your own homes, in your own comfort. And we had a tech company that worked with us to, help with those recordings. And we first, with this group anyway, we did a test with them to make sure, that their lighting was all right. And so then I facilitated the conversation. And it was, like we're doing, interviewing, and giving each person a chance to share her own story, and then having them interact with each other. And it was just so powerful, the affirmations that they gave each other at the end.
I bet. Is there a place that we can go and see this? I mean, is this on the Minnesota Humanities website? Or
tell our
listeners how they can actually go and see this. Because that's one of the, there's a lot of drawbacks to having virtual, but one of the, I think, benefits is that the message is able to be conveyed, you know, beyond the four walls that may have previously been in a circumstance like this. Now we can all share in this powerful message.
Yes, you can. So Minnesota Humanities Center Sweet Potato Comfort Pie, but www.mnhum.org. And that brings you to the Minnesota Humanities webpage, and you can just go to events and you'll see How Can We Breathe series. Mm-hmm. And click on to either of the events that have already happened, and the recordings are there.
Wow.
So you get to hear this conversation. And after each conversation, another powerful thing happens. We have a young woman by the name of Dr. Brittany Lewis, and she's done a lot of research, particularly around systemic racism, and she is able to give this summation of what we just heard, bringing the statistics and the data and the historical perspective into it. Quite interesting, very interesting, very intriguing. She's a brilliant young woman. And then when she's done with that, we break people into smaller groups and send them into the breakout rooms with a trained facilitator. And that's where Sweet Potato Pie comes in, because we, train the facilitators to use the concept of story circle, which is, one of the processes that I just
believe strongly in. Within the humanities, right?
So they go into the smaller sessions. They get a chance to kind of, talk about what they heard. And they also get to talk about themselves and what does this mean for you and what you have been doing and what you plan to do and you want to do and your desire and your actions. So several things are happening here simultaneously. One is people who may just be getting absorbed into this. It's like, oh my goodness, this is just, oh, really? This is happening. Oh, I can't believe this is happening. I only thought this happened in the news. Oh no, this is real. Mm-hmm. And then you've got that person, but you've also got people who are there to learn. What can I do? How can I be of a tool to move forward here? So policies and practices and procedures and just trying to get people activated into making a change is the purpose of this. So after these conversations take place, everybody comes back to the main room. We get to hear, a few key nuggets from each of the rooms, and then we talk about what organizations in these respective communities took the pies and who they gifted them to. And then that's sort of the close of the evening.
That's incredible. So how do they get the pies and then they decide that they gift them to individuals in the communities that are related to the themes that they discuss? Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. So we try to reach out to organizations that, Minnesota Humanities has in some way had some sort of relationship with, or organizations that we've certainly heard about. And we reach out to them and say, we're interested in you. Accepting. So we try to get five, to take five pies in, let's say, St. Cloud. That was our first one. And then five pies in the Twin Cities area. So that's 50 pies total, because each of the five organizations would receive five pies each. So then you get to select the what we call the mamas. I'm still on that one, right? And this can be a woman who has, again, either lost a child, or it could be a woman who, or girl for that matter, who may be doing work in the community around racial justice or leadership, whatever these organizations felt that they wanted to do and how. So that's how we did it. But the other piece of it too is who does the baking?
Yep.
So we have these remarkable chefs, three of them that I've working with, who are coordinating that with the community bakers. So these three bakers that are working with Sweet Potato Comfort Pie are the ones who are reaching out across these four communities, including the Twin Cities, to find these bakers. So for example, one baker we kind of learned about through a Sweet Potato Comfort Pie volunteer, was a young man who used to live here in the Twin Cities, and he and his partner have two eating establishments in the St. Cloud area, in a town called St. Joseph, which is right next door to St. Cloud, 10 minutes away. So they have the bakery, and they have a Louisiana cuisine restaurant, and they're right next to each other. So he, Mr. McBee, and his fiance, Aaron, made the 25 pies. And then the five organizations picked the pies up on the date that they were ready. And by the way, they're using my recipe for the sweet potato pie, and they're using my branding for sweet potato comfort pie. So that's with the two hearts on top. And we send them the packaging, the boxes, the insert that goes in. So everything is, you know, uniformal. And the insert comes from our CEO here.
Well, you know what's interesting about this? I almost see the pies as a talking stick in a way that you know, it's, you know, the pie is there as an empowerment. You're passing that along. And that's an acknowledgement of your willingness to engage in a meaningful conversation, a meaningful dialogue, and ultimately to take action, which is what it sounds like you're discussing here. It's not just, you know, having these meaningful conversations, but then coming back together and talking about how to apply those lessons, those takeaways to meaningful action in the context, you know, in this context in regards to racial injustice, anti-racism, and the rest. And so I want to now sort of zoom back out and
let me just add one more piece to this. When we're done with all four of them, we then extend an invitation for all of those organizations to come together. That'll be towards mid-December. To reflect on what happened since, you know, you took these pies out to communicate. Was there an additional relationship established, or did that create any additional changes in your community in any way? And we know that that's true already with some of the connections that have been made. So that's part of the process as well.
Quantifiable change, one slice of pie at a time. It's incredible. So as I was saying, because I you know, you jump right into this, and I wanted to follow your lead because this is, you know, really a very unique type of initiative. But I want to kind of zoom back out and take a look at, you know, the origins of Sweet Potato Comfort Pie and your role within it and the sweet potato pie itself. So, Let's rewind all the way back to where you got this idea to start Sweet Potato Comfort Pie. What motivated you, and how did this get all kicked off?
Well, you know, I've been baking the pies for a number of years. It began just as something to do. You know, you just cook. I didn't grow up cooking a lot of food. As I tell people, I really don't even like to cook. But somewhere after I moved home from home, I grew up with my grandmother and great-grandmother in the rural South. And by the time I'd gotten grown, married, and living now in Colorado, I had moved from Tennessee. One day I decided I wanted to make a sweet potato pie. There were two Southern desserts I wanted to make. And I called my grandmother and said, "Can you tell me how to make a sweet potato pie and a blackberry cobbler?" And she told me what to do. And I just messed them both up. But I really messed up the cobbler. The sweet potato pie wasn't messed up as badly. So then I decided, okay, I'm going to try them both again. Really messed that cobbler up again. But the sweet potato pie was better. And I continued to make them. And people, you know how it is. When you go to places, if folks like what you make, they'll say, okay, we want you to bring this. We want you to bring that.
Yep.
And so people were asking me to bring the sweet potato pie. So that's how that went for several years. And it would be several years and several moves later. But what I was happening, you know, I tell people all the time, I didn't call this pie. The pie was calling me all those years, and I didn't even know it. because I would go to a community. At that time, I worked for IBM Corporation, and I, you know, moved around to a few places. And I would always gravitate towards the dessert menu if I knew there was a sweet potato pie there. And I always tasted it and just see what it was like. And so if I liked something about it, I would ask for the ingredients just to see what is it that's making this different from the way mine tastes. And that happened several times. And that's how my recipe that began as my grandmother's recipe shifted into what I call the community recipe, because I was
Which is on the Sweet Potato Comfort Pie website, by the way, for folks who are interested.
So here, later on, I'm now working in education and, you know, taking pie in during Black History Month just to say, yeah, this is a tradition. And then people started asking, why don't you sell it? I'm like, no. And that continued. So I did start selling it at the markets, the farmer market, for a while. And then I realized after a few years of that, backaches and knee aches and everything else, I'm really not making money. What was bringing me joy, though, was how people love to just talk and stand there and talk about the history of the pie for them and what it meant. Mm-hmm. And eventually I had to stop because I just was not making money. I was just getting exhausted working full time and then trying to do this.
I bet. Sure.
But I was watching television during Ferguson, Missouri, after Michael Brown had been killed. And I felt so badly. I was like, what can I do? For some reason, I suddenly felt compelled to do something. And out of nowhere, and I just tell people because I am, you know, somewhat spiritual. And I was telling people, it was the Lord speaking to me. And I said, I don't know why you're telling me to make sweet potato pies. But that's what I was being told, to make sweet potato pies and take them to Ferguson. I got up from television watching and went in and just stood around in circles in my kitchen and decided, all right, that's what I'm going to do. So I made about 30 pies and drove down. I contacted a pastor and asked if he knew anyone in Ferguson area that I could connect with, because I didn't want to just show up.
Right.
And so he did. And there was this powerful experience of getting down there. And by the time I arrived, the initial protesting had stopped. And it was just sort of an eerie silence in the city because people were waiting to see if there was going to be an indictment. As we would learn, you know, a few weeks later after that, there was no indictment. And then the rioting and everything, protesting rather, started all over again. But what I discovered on that trip was people were very receptive to receiving the pie. That's another thing, by the way. I didn't just go up and say, here, take this pie, but I asked if they would be willing to accept the pie and why it was important that I give them the pie. And
what did you say? How do people react to that? You know, they don't maybe necessarily know you. You're from a different state. You come to Ferguson, Missouri. How long is that drive from you know, where you are in Minnesota down to Missouri? I'm sure that was quite an emotional experience, just driving down there, thinking about what you're going to do. But you know, you arrive with, you know, 30 odd pies. How does that how do people react when you say, "Will you take this? Here I am. You don't know me."
Right. Well, the very first thing I did was stop in Chicago because I have a friend there, Naomi Davis, who has a program called Blacks in Green. And it's this food sustainability program. And they were having this major event. And she had asked me to stop by just to see, because this was a kickoff for some big festival. And she said, oh, by the way, bring some pie with you.
just, you know, by the way.
And I did. So I made extra. You know, I had my 30-something pies that I was dealing with, but I took. And what I noticed was there was this group of elderly Black women sitting together eating, because she had a chef there teaching people how to cook traditional soul food without making it, you know, bad.
Right.
And here I am with sweet potato pie. I'm like, uh-oh.
Oops.
I watched those ladies And when they ate the pie and they were nodding that, oh yeah, this is good, that just really lifted my confidence that I was doing the right thing. Because, you know, first thing I'm thinking is, here I am, the nerve of me coming from Minnesota, going right into, you know, the place where more Black people are who have migrated from the South, who know about sweet potato pie. And here I come, even though I had come from the South, but still the perception of it. But for these ladies to be sitting there, and they were elderly women, and they were eating it, and they were all right with it, it just really did uplift me. And when I got there, the first place the pastor took me, he said, if you don't mind, I'd really like you to take pie by this family. And they had just lost their father.
Oh, goodness.
So this man had been, you know, ill, but not, they weren't expecting him to go so fast. And when this daughter of his, who was probably about early 60s, started crying because I gave her a sweet potato pie, I thought, oh my goodness. And the pastor said, you know, this is something here, what you've got going. I said, well, I don't know what I've got
going. I don't know what I got going.
And then
divine intervention.
It really was all the way. And that's what happened. People were often in tears. The pies are pretty. They're beautiful. You open the box and the aroma comes out and, you know, it smells good and it tastes good too. So for people to react as they did, we were one time, you know, I had stopped to get something to eat, and I'm in a very popular soul food restaurant that used to be on television. It was a reality show at the time. And I wanted to go there, and I'm in line because the line is so long. It's a tourist attraction. And this family of Black people were in front of me, and they were celebrating something. And, you know, I didn't know what until I finally could hear. The young lady was, she had just graduated from nursing school. And I don't know what came over me. And I just stepped out of line and walked up to her and I said, congratulations to you. This is really wonderful hearing that you just graduated from nursing school. And she said, yeah, because my baby is still in the hospital. My baby is 2 months old and hasn't been home yet.
Oh, goodness.
Because the baby was premature and had some health issues. And she's been in school herself and the baby's been ill and the family just wanted to take her out and treat her. And I said, well, do you mind taking a sweet potato pie? And she looked at me like, what?
What?
We're standing here in this restaurant and you're asking me if I would. That's what I think she was thinking. And she said, yeah. I said, okay. I said, I won't worry about it right now, giving it to you. Let's let everybody get in and get settled. And then when it's time for me to leave, I'll go and get it and bring it to you. So that's what I did. And when I got ready to leave, because they were still there, and I brought it to her and gave it to her, you could see the shock on her face because she wasn't expecting it to look like that. Because it is. They're very beautifully packaged. And she
that makes a difference.
She looked up at me and she said, this is beautiful. I said, well, thank you. And she says, it smells good too. I said, well, I believe it tastes good too. And then everybody else was, you know, looking and wondering like, what is going on here? Who is this person that you're just taking this pie from? And she just told me how uplifting it made her feel to have received that. And then she started to cry. And I said, I don't want you to cry. I'm going to go now. And that's what happened along the way. And on the way back home, I realized we've got to do something right here in Golden Valley, Minnesota, which is home. And we did. And we started the Martin Luther King holiday weekend of service. So on that Saturday, volunteers come and make the number of pies that Dr. King's age would have been. And then on that Sunday, people come and have conversations around race. And they also talk about who they'd like to gift those pies to. So this year, 91 pies went out into the community.
Oh, that's just wonderful. And what a wonderful way to, I think, end our conversation. I am just so inspired by your work, and I know that our audience will be as well. Nourishing for the body, nourishing for the soul, sweet potato comfort pie. We are so happy to have you. Thank you again for joining us today. We'll be right back after these messages from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. My name is Samantha Garner, and I'm from Boston, Massachusetts. I'm a Cheeselandian because I take cheese seriously, just like they do in Wisconsin. Cheeselandia is a community for loud and proud cheese lovers brought to life by Wisconsin Cheese. I know that I can always cook amazing food with their cheese, and it's even good enough just to snack on. As a Cheeselandia member, I know there is always a supportive community behind me who always gets as excited as I do about cheese. Go to cheeselandia.com to learn more, and if it's for you, sign up. Check us out on Instagram at Cheeselandia.
Joining the show now is Valerie Lux, the woman behind Honey Pie Cafe and the host of the Great Midwestern Pie Bake Off. Valerie, thanks for being on the show with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, I am excited to have you talk to our listeners and our audience about your love of pie, since we're talking on this episode about Midwestern baking and how sort of the Midwestern baking goes into people's DNA, and pie is very much part of that story. So I know you're a pie maker, and you even teach pie classes. Mm-hmm. How did you get into making pie and ultimately starting the Honey Pie Cafe?
Honestly, I could blame my mother for pie making. I think a lot of pie makers could do the same. My
totally.
Mom taught me very young. She used to make apple pie and lemon meringue pie all the time. And I was probably 7 or so when I first learned, and I just loved it. And I would read our Better Homes and Gardens, the red checkered cookbooks, and mm-hmm. the joy of cooking that I think every Midwestern house probably had.
Absolutely.
And loved to just recreate the recipes at home as a kid. And so I just always kind of baked and worked on stuff out of love, and just grew into it over time. And I actually went to school to do something completely opposite of baking and running a restaurant. But in 2009, my brother and I opened Honey Pie Cafe. And my initial job was just to run the front of the house and the business end, and my brother was the chef. And I thought it'd be cute to make some pies here and there because I loved it so much. And it just became its own little monster. And I ended up baking all the time for the first 3 years until I could hire some bakers.
So how many pies did you end up making at any given time on your own?
Oh, God, when we first opened, I would make 30 or 40 pies a day.
Wow.
Yeah, it was nuts. I lived in the kitchen. It was completely unexpected.
What's your specialty?
I think we're really well known for our cream pies. And then
you're
you know,
a woman after my own heart because
yeah.
I am a pie baker myself, but I actually shy away from fruit pies, and I'm all about cream. So I want to hear more.
Yeah. So I wanted them to be very reminiscent of the old, you know, diner style pies that you would mm-hmm. see rotating in the cases, like when you'd go into your neighborhood, you know, cafes and restaurants. So
yep.
They're in a graham crust, but they're very traditional cream base. We do everything from scratch. From the beginning of the founding of the restaurant in 2009, we had a huge emphasis on sourcing locally. So we're using, you know, Wisconsin eggs, Wisconsin milk, Wisconsin cream. I think, you know, the sugar's from Michigan. It's like, so we're, and butter, of course, Wisconsin butter.
Obviously.
So it's, yeah, I think they're just extra delicious because we've always really focused on great nearby quality ingredients, and everything's from scratch that goes into them.
So. Well, I think you've told us where and how a little bit, without explicitly saying it, but how the Midwest has influenced your pie baking, you know, from mm-hmm. your mom, from an early age, from, you know, the those cookbooks that are so iconic, Better Homes and Gardens, Joy of Cooking,
that locally sourced ingredients, which is so important for everyone. But I think that, you know, Midwesterners take really a lot of pride in making sure that, you know, they really are getting the best quality ingredients from their neighbors. But, you know, are there any other ways that you see the Midwest manifesting itself in your baking or in your Honey Pie Cafe work?
Well, I first moved up to Wisconsin in 2005 or six, I think.
That's right. You're from outside of Chicago, right?
Right. Yeah. But grew up outside of Chicago, and I came up to Milwaukee with my brother to do our first restaurant, which is a different story. But I entered the Wisconsin State Fair pie competition just because having been in Chicago, I could never. It was hard to go to the Illinois one because it's all the way down in the middle of the state, and this one was just, you know, right down the road. So I thought, I'm going to sign up for this pie championship. And I ended up winning a blue ribbon, and that, I almost cried, but it was very inspirational being, it was really fun to be at the contest because I saw all these people who clearly had been competing for years and took it very seriously. They were coming from all over the state, and it really inspired me in our founding of Honey Pie, because you could just see the pride that was taken in these very, you know, Midwestern roots of cooking and food, especially in Wisconsin being such a, you know, the
dairy
the farm
state.
And dairy state that
exactly.
It is. Yeah. And so it just was really, we took that into the building of Honey Pie's menu, and just it really inspired where a lot of our pies come from.
What I have to ask what your winning pie was.
It was a nectarine crumble.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
that's awesome. I've entered a few of my pies into our local county fairs, and one of them that actually did get a ribbon was a peaches and cream pie. So I feel like sometimes, because not a lot of fairs actually allow the cream pies, you know,
they
specifically
don't.
Because of refrigeration issues.
Yep.
And so this was more of the cream was really not necessarily, it was more of a like a cream cheese base, but it wasn't like a full cream pie.
Full cream.
That's something that really has like weighed on me. And where I come from, the competition is very stiff because of Amish country.
Yeah.
So the Amish communities, which, you know, rightfully so, have just these beautiful, incredible baked goods and pies, and they clean up. so I was really proud that I like got anything on the board. At one of our local county fairs. But so we're talking pie contests, which brings us to the pièce de résistance, which is the Great Midwestern Pie Bake Off,
mm-hmm.
which you started.
Mm-hmm.
How did this all come about? Why did you decide to start a specific competition for pie, and particularly Midwestern pie?
Well, I think, you know, the state fair was just really fun, and ever participating in that was a great time. I like to say I have half of a blue ribbon from the Missouri State Fair because I coached my best friend through her winning pie.
So awesome.
I think I've always just thought pie contests were so fun, and I love how the participants in them take so much pride in what they do, and everybody has such a strong opinion about pie or a favorite from their family that they are proud of. So I just wanted to bring that to our community because they're just a really fun time. And we started it in 2016. This is our fifth year doing it, and it has been a really good time every year. It's been really fun to see the creativity that people bring to the contest.
So what kind of categories do these pies compete in? There are a bunch of different categories, right? And I think they change every year?
We change them up every year. Historically, in the before times, we did three categories usually. And we always had a best Wisconsin ingredients category. And that was the pie made, you know, pie made with all Wisconsin sourced ingredients. And those were really fun. We've done cherry, we've done apple, we've done chocolate in the past. This year we just have one category because the pie contest is slightly different this year. And it's just family favorites.
So, which I'm glad I'm going to get to sort of, you know, how things have changed with the competition in a minute, but I do want to talk a little bit about the process of submission mm-hmm. and the judging of these pies in just a traditional, you know, over the last 4 years, what would that look like?
So normally we had the contest on a Saturday and people would bring their pies in the morning and enter them. They're entered anonymously and then we line them all up on a big, huge table. People can come through and see them. And we invite different community partners from the city to be judging teams. So in the past, we've had representatives from the local independent radio station, from our independent magazines and newspapers. We've had local businesses come. And then the Honey Pie baking team also acts as a set of judges. And we judge the pies. We have a, you know, system and grading system we go through. And then at the end of it, we announce the winners. And typically this is happening during a fall festival that we've had on our block. This year's the first year that it'll be a little different. And hopefully the last year we can go back to the other one.
I think we all kind of feel the same way as people have adapted, you know, because of the coronavirus pandemic and everything has gone virtual and online, we're kind of losing that sense of community just, you know, in this year, particularly as so many of, you know, our small towns have these festivals, whether, you know, it's, you know, some kind of an ethnic festival in the summertime or our county fairs, the fall festivals, pumpkin fests, apple festivals, zucchini fest. I mean, you know, we
cranberry festival,
grape jamboree. I mean, we got a ton of strawberry fest. I mean, I can set my clock in Northeast Ohio by whatever kind of random festival, and you know, they were all canceled this year, and understandably so.
Yeah.
But you were able to continue the pie bake off virtually by making some changes. So you said that there's one category, which is family favorites, but how else have you managed to you know, adapt the bake off and take it virtual?
So this year I was inspired by the old, you know, like the Dole company, or like in the 50s, the food companies would come out with
like
recipe submission contests. Mm-hmm. And then you'd select the best recipes and they like go on the can of pineapple or whatever. We're following that same idea, and contestants submit their recipes. And they submit to the one category of family favorites, and then we're asking contestants to bake the pie at home, submit a photograph, and then also tell us a little story about why this is their favorite family favorite, you know, or pie, what makes it special to them. And so far, the entries have been really wonderful. So they're submitting that online, and then at the end of the submission period, which is October 30th, the Honey Pie baking team is going to go through all the submissions, and we're going to select out the top six recipes. And then we're going to actually make those pies and then submit them or share them with our community judges. So we'll drive them around town and drop them off.
Drop them off.
Yeah. And then they'll be judged that way. And then the top three will be selected from those.
Have you changed the criteria for judging, for example? Like, I mean, you know, so you have a specific scorecard in previous years, but have you modified that at all for, you know, this COVID land
of,
you know, virtual pie judging?
Yeah, we did, because it was interesting. It was like, how do we judge through a piece of paper and a, a photograph, basically? So the first round of judging is based on the photograph. So it's the attractiveness and the appeal of the pie. And there's actually a separate prize for the coolest or the prettiest looking pie that gets submitted.
And there's some serious pie art out there. On Instagram, if you check it out, I mean, these people like literally are artists, like even more than bakers. It's incredible.
Absolutely. I can't do some of that stuff that's
out
there. It's amazing. It's really cool to see. And we get a lot of wonderful, I mean, just in the past years, we've always had a prize for the best decorated pie, and the stuff that comes in is just really cool. So we're basing that's one of the criteria on the first round, and then the creativeness or the uniqueness of the pie recipe. So that's a little different. In the past, we've had more hard and fast categories like apple and chocolate, so it wasn't really about the recipe. And then we also have an award for the best pie story. And then part of the judging criteria is just how well the recipe is written and conveyed, mm-hmm. because one of the prizes is the top three winners will become pies of the month January, February, and March, and the bake shop will make them. So we want the recipe.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Do you usually do that, or is this something different? Oh, wow.
This is the first year we're trying this. So I if it works and if people are receptive to it, then I'd love to continue it. I think it's really neat. We have such a great community here in this area, and historically the folks who participate in this are typically from this area, and so I think they'd love to be able to – I think it'd be cool to see your pie featured.
Yeah, no question. And since it's virtual this year, have you seen an expansion of entries outside of Wisconsin or your immediate vicinity, since now people can enter from – far and wide?
From far and wide. Not quite yet, but we're still in the very early days of the submission window. So I'm hoping there's lots of people out there in other places crafting their recipes and their pie photographs. So I'm hoping we'll see people from beyond just this smaller community. We've gotten, over the years, we've gotten people from farther away than just Milwaukee, but typically it's, folks from nearby.
Mm-hmm.
Since they had to drive their pie in and drop it off.
Yeah, well, and if it's a cream pie, you could have a splat. And
right.
That's no good.
The
all
whipped
that
cream.
Hard work. And,
yeah.
Next thing you know, you're scraping it off the floor of the car.
Right.
which is not pretty. So I'm really excited to hear about how this goes. And if somebody wanted to follow this online or check it out to see, is there a place to... see the entries of the winners online?
Yeah, we'll be sharing all of this through our social media channels, and the pictures and everything will be posted at Honey Pie Cafe, which is our Instagram handle, as well as Facebook. And you can find out more information about the pie contest itself and all the rules on our webpage.
Well, I know that I'm definitely going to be checking it out, and maybe next year I'll actually enter.
That'd be fun.
Which would be a blast. And yeah. as our audience is listening about this, hopefully maybe you'll get some entries from across the country, or at least across the Midwest, as it is the Midwestern pie bake-off.
Yeah, so that would be great. That's our goal, is I'd love to see this actually move to further, encompass more of the Midwest as we keep going with this over time. That'd be really cool.
Well, it sounds like you are off to a great start for sure. Valerie Lux, Honey Pie Cafe, with the Great Midwestern Pie Bake Off. Thanks so much for joining the show.
Eat Your Heartland Out is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.